In this episode of Movie Wallet, we review People Like Us, Magic Mike, and To Rome with Love. It's time for Movie Wallet. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yours as well.
Movie Wallet is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Yay!
And you.
So, those hungry hippos that we had, what do you think of those?
They were unexpectedly amazing.
Weren't they delicious? Rashmi can't have any. She's on low carb at the moment.
I'm low-carbing at the moment.
So there's a bag of chocolate in the house that I'm just devouring.
I mean, literally.
It's all like mine.
Eating his way through bags of chocolate.
I mean, we are all foodies. We love food. And
I mean, you know, so. No, I was going to say my loss is really his gain.
Yeah, so good for you. Good for you. I mean, I you know, if I see something new, a promising-looking product, you know, I have to buy it. And then, you know, 8 times out of 10, it's crap. And, you know, how good that, you know, 2 times out of 10, it's just like, oh, I thank God.
I might have to give up low carb, but you've eaten the whole box. I just chucked out the box.
The Hungry Hippo's gone. These are made by, you know, the European chocolate maker Kinder, for those who are listening. They do this delicious white nutty chocolate thing. And these are little biscuit things they're like a wafer filled with hazelnut cream and surrounded on the outside by hazelnuts. It's just, it's divine. Divine, I tell you.
Plus you get the joy of biting a hippo's head off.
Oh my God.
I usually start with the butt.
Okay, or you can bite the hippo's butt off.
You could write a book, The Psychology of Hungry Hippo and the Way You Eat It.
It's something about eating it. It's head. That doesn't appeal to me, so I'm like, I guess.
That's very topical, given the movie Magic Mike that we're going to review.
Oh my gosh, all right. You want to start with that one? No, let's do People Like Us, because I think Rashmi's bursting to talk about Magic Mike. But let's talk about the one that you and I saw instead, Yazdi, because we had a choice.
Well, we haven't told everyone what we're going to actually review. We're reviewing 3 today, right?
No, just 2, isn't it? People Like Us and Magic Mike. Oh, you want to deal with Rome with Love? Okay. So, sorry, 3 movies this week. People Like Us, Magic Mike, and To Rome with Love, the latest Woody Allen movie. So let's start with People Like Us, briefly. Rashmi, you want to tell us about the movie?
Sure. So from DreamWorks Pictures comes People Like Us. This is a drama comedy about family inspired by true events, starring Chris Pine as Sam, a 20-something fast-talking salesman whose latest deal collapses on the day he learns that his father suddenly died. Against his wishes, Sam is called home, where he must put his father's estate in order and reconnect with his estranged family. In the course of fulfilling his father's last wishes, Sam uncovers a startling secret that turns his entire world upside down. He has a 30-year-old sister, Frankie, whom he never knew about, played by Elizabeth Banks. As their relationship develops, Sam is forced to rethink everything he thought he knew about his family and re-examine his own life choices in the process. So this is directed by Alan Kurtzman, and it stars Chris Pine, Elizabeth Banks, Olivia Wilde, Mark Duplass again, and Michelle Pfeiffer. So I didn't see this one, so I'm very excited to find out what you both thought. And I made the choice to go and see Yazdi. I made the choice to go and see Magic Mike.
I saw Yazdi in the movie theater.
Yes.
With People Like Us.
Yes. But not in the same way I saw Magic Mike.
Right. I wasn't stripping.
Yazdi, shall I run out and see this one? Shall I get this on my list?
I think you should. You know, there's going to be people who will write this movie off as the usual Hollywood pablum, you know, with recycled material about families and estranged children. But I actually like the hardworking ethic of this movie. I don't think this movie is very lazy. In fact, there is something very blue-collar-like about it. It just is very old-fashioned in terms of, you know, there's the story to tell. There's nothing original about the story. Anybody who's seen the first 10 minutes of the movie knows exactly what the finish line looks like. And yet, you enjoy getting to the finish line. So, you know, I liked that the movie's no great shakes, but there's a good workman-like ethic to it, which I admired.
Okay, Joe.
I thought this was brilliant.
Yeah.
It worked so well. And like you, Yazdi, I think despite the fact that this was predictable, it was so very well acted and very well shot. It had a high intensity to it. I always felt like the movie was kind of in my face a little bit with everything that was going on. One of the reviewers, I think it was maybe LA Times guy, pointed out that this movie is a series of fast cuts, almost like it's an action drama. And that really did feel that way. I mean, this movie perhaps had the same energy level that I experienced when we saw Lincoln Lawyer last year. It was that very intense filmmaking, but it was just so well done. I was in the movie instantly, and I didn't fall out of the movie until I left the theater.
And I mean, I love Elizabeth Banks. She seems to be working so hard these days as well, like many others. Did she deliver in this one?
I mean, she's cast against type, I think, in this movie. But I absolutely, I think, you know, she's very credible, and it's not an easy role. Yeah. I mean, I think her character has to go through a lot of stuff, and there's one particular plot development which is particularly atypical, shall we say, and I think she it requires just the right tone, and she gets it.
Yeah There are so many moments here that could have gone bad TV soap opera, and all of the actors managed to somehow avoid that. The standout for me, I think, was Michelle Pfeiffer. She had a terrific role in this one, and she nailed every line. You understood this character's pain, you understood this character's motives, and it was not from dialogue, it was completely from her performance here. So, I mean, she was the standout for me, but, you know, the whole cast here, you know, Chris Pine, I thought, was as good as I've ever seen him. Elizabeth Banks, terrific. I felt that she was perhaps a little too beautiful for the role that she was playing. That's a little bit of a distraction. I mean, you know, she was a poor lady with perfect teeth. Oh, so perfect teeth. So a little, I hate to hold people's looks against them, but she was perhaps a little too beautiful for the role. But, I mean, other than that, this movie was just so nicely done and paced and written and directed.
And, you know, I think with this kind of a script, I mean, there is literally a minefield at every corner of cliches. I mean, this movie could lapse into cliche at every minute, literally. And the movie does a very good job of avoiding them. And you're right, Joe. I mean, I didn't even think about it until you mentioned it earlier. But things are done differently in this movie. I mean, there are a few places where there are these cuts, like in an action movie.
Yep.
And on the face of it, it seems weird to have it in a movie like this, but it actually builds some dramatic heft. You know, it really delivers a particular feeling by the way the movie's been cut. And absolutely, the acting here is, I think, ultimately what elevates the movie. Chris Pine really surprised me. I mean, you know, I've kind of, you know, put him in this box of, you know, pretty boy. And, you know, I think this is the first movie where I realized he can pretty much deliver the goods. But, you know, honestly, the standout here is Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, she just grounds the film with this really unfussy discipline. There is nothing showy about her performance. It's a very unfussy, very, you know, close to the ground kind of acting. But she really shows the younger actors, this is how you do it. This is why you are a Michelle Pfeiffer. This is why you have esteem. I mean, you know, good for her. I can't wait again. You know, she looks old in this movie, and she looks beautiful looking old. I love how she looks, and I hope that her best work is ahead of her and that she does these kinds of character roles. And, you know, I hope she gets an Oscar that has been held for her for a long time.
I was just going to say that this movie made me think about Oscar. I don't think that this movie is one that the Academy will hold in high esteem come Oscar's time. But I think if it gets any kind of recognition, I think Michelle Pfeiffer is award worthy, certainly, of a nomination in terms of a best supporting role, because this is what a best supporting actor does. They bring the movie together in a way that elevates the entire script and everything that everyone is doing based solely upon their performance. And this movie was made infinitely better by her presence here.
So what's interesting is I was looking up the director, who's Alex Kurtz. Alex Kurtzman, and this is he's typically been a screenwriter, and he's just made the switch to direct. This is his first directing gig, other than I think one episode of Alias, the TV program. How did that work?
Interestingly, I mean, I'd heard his name somewhere. For some reason, I thought he'd directed some other movie that I'd liked, but I'd heard there was some buzz about him and this movie out there, so I had looked at reviews before I saw this one. I thought he did a terrific job here. I think the style of direction was interesting. Again, I'll go back to this kind of frame after frame. There was no single camera angle that seemed to hold for more than about 5 seconds. It was, you know, shot one, cut, shot two, cut, shot three, cut, and it was all very, it was high energy. It felt super intense, but I think that enabled him to get us into the movie in a way that, you know, this we would have otherwise fallen asleep, because really the plot didn't have much in the way of surprises. I mean, you know, this is, in fact, I don't want to give away any spoilers here, but this movie doesn't, like you said, yes, it goes exactly where you expect it to go. And somehow that is not disappointing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, interesting, because he's, you know, he's obviously famous for writing a lot of big stuff, Transformers, a ton of TV, Cowboys and Aliens.
I mean, you asked about his directing. There's one thing I like about the movie and one thing I didn't like about it. The one thing I like about the movie is the tone of the movie. I think if I had to make a movie which has a plot which is so obviously soapy, and I'm not judging, I really like this movie, I would actually choose to make it fairly dry and unsentimental. But contrary to expectation, this movie, the director or whoever, has chosen to really very bravely be very sentimental about this whole movie. And it should become a cliched mess and syrup, but it doesn't. It's not syrup. It really works. So I commend them for taking the hard way, being kind of genuinely, you know, touchy-feely and still coming out on top. The part I didn't like about the movie was the background score, which seemed really overproduced.
Mm.
This is a movie which has some really good acting, and I really don't need a song or a tune playing at the back at every minute telling me exactly what I should be feeling. You know, if you have a scene where somebody's crying, you don't need the violin playing in the back. It's pretty obvious it's a sad scene. So it was a little distracting for me, because they didn't leave any scene alone. Every scene had some bit of music at the back, which seemed a little bit overproduced. And then I was horrified. I know, Joe, you want to say this, probably the same thing. I was horrified to find that the score for the movie is actually done by A.R. Rahman.
So, oh, wow.
You know, I think that's probably a little lack of confidence, as the, you know, this is the directorial debut. And I think you're worried that the audience may not connect with the scene in the way that you've shot it. So the way to add to that oftentimes is to put some dramatic music behind it. And, you know, A.R. Rahman tends to be overly dramatic. So he perhaps should have been a little more confident in what he had produced here and not felt the need to do that. But, you know, again, I think it didn't detract from the movie in my opinion. So, you know, probably not something I would notice, and probably not something that a lot of people will notice.
Okay, so wind this one up for us then. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
I like this one a lot. I connected with it on many levels. I think, you know, on a personal level, I think it has some parallels with my own life. But just a very well put together, shot, acted and directed movie. So 8 feels a little stingy. 9 feels a little too much.
Joe, are you going to give it a half?
No, I'm going to...
But you said the words.
I didn't say half. It's between an 8 and a 9. Between an 8 and a 9. And damn it, I'll give it a 8.
Yes, D.
One of the reviewers of the film, I think, said it best. I think they said that this is the sort of film that gives Hollywood a good name. And I really believe it. This is just, you know, this is the kind of movies Hollywood should be spending a lot of money making. I'm not going to argue that. It's a good script. It's got good acting. The only complaint I have is about the title of the film. I wish they had come up with a better one. I don't like that one. But I like the movie a lot. I give it a 7.5 out of 10.
No halves.
Which I'll bump up to 8.
Wow, 2 8s and a nearly 9.
Oh. So while we were at People Like Us, which you're right, Yasdi, what the hell does that title have to do with anything in the film? I've got no idea.
Yeah.
What a bizarre choice. So while we were watching that movie, Rashmi was at the porno theater watching Magic Mike, which Yazdi, I think you're going to introduce. And I think had I remembered at the time that this was a Steven Soderbergh movie, I may have gone along with her, but
well,
let's find out.
Yeah.
So, Yazdi, tell us about Magic Mike.
So, as unlikely as it sounds, the actor Channing Tatum in real life used to be a stripper before he became a fairly popular film star. And for a while now, he's been wanting to get a film made based on his own life's experiences. And apparently, he's been asking several directors in Hollywood to do it. He enlisted Steven Soderbergh, with whom he most recently worked on Haywire. And Soderbergh himself, who has been threatening to go into retirement for years now, somehow bit. And so here we have Magic Mike, which is based loosely on the story of a young guy who gets mentored in how to be a good male stripper by a colorful character of more experienced men. The film stars Channing Tatum, of course, Alex Pettifer, Matt Bomer, Joe Manganiello from True Blood, as well as Matthew McConaughey. I actually want to see this film to see if Soderbergh can take this material and make it work. So does this movie rise above its tawdry premise, Rashmi?
No pun intended. So this is chick flick on a whole different level. Okay, so the audience was 90% women, and for good reason. If no one knew who Channing Tatum was before, this is definitely his coming out party. I mean, that's all I can say. I mean, you couldn't hear the dialogue at times for all the whooping. And I mean, literally, and this is what I imagine when it goes general release, this is groups of women flocking to the screening. And they're so excited before the film even begins that there was a preview before of some horror movie that's coming out. And there was even mild whooping through that the atmosphere was so electric and excited. But this is through and through a gimmick movie made for women. So Steven Soderbergh, thank you so much for thinking about us women.
Did you like it or not? Because you haven't told us.
I didn't hate it, but I had a smile on my face. And I think the only other time I felt like this is when I went to a Chippendale show. So,
what? What do you mean, don't sew me?
So the problem with the movie is it's a gimmick movie, okay? And the gimmick is so huge that the fact that the story just gets lazier and lazier as it goes on doesn't really matter. Because if you're a woman, you're there to see these guys stripping.
When did you go to a Chippendale show?
You know I went to a Chippendale
show. You have to tell everyone about this now.
Okay, so when I was probably about 19 years old, my cousin used to work for a travel company that was connected to the entertainment industry, and she happened to get free tickets to a Chippendale show. So the two of us went, and for the first one, the first number when the guys come on and you see the first amount of stripping, it's really funny and people are giggling. But then when they go into the shower, you just feel really dirty. So that's kind of how I felt with this at times. You just feel dirty because they really go there. I mean, it's a male stripper movie. That's really what it is.
That story is at least consistent with the last time you told me, I believe.
Oh, okay, good.
Just checking on that.
So I'm a little disappointed because I really want to see this movie just to see if Soderbergh always does movies differently. I mean, no two movies of his are terribly alike.
Right, and this is like nothing he's done before.
So does he add something to the material? Is it a fun stuff or this is purely just eye candy?
No, it's eye candy and it's very authentic to that one experience I had going to a strip show. So it's very cleverly filmed at stage level as well. So when it's on screen, you are literally as if you are in the show. And a lot of the film is the show and the scenes that they do through the show. And then it's the antics before and after. And then there's this kind of lukewarm story in the background. And like I said, the film just gets lazier and lazier and lazier. So the story just, it's not believable. It doesn't really go anywhere. But it doesn't matter because Channing Tatum is so good in this film. I mean,
well, no, good to look at or good?
No, he's really good. He's well, look, like you said, this was his profession before. And he brings it. I mean, he is amazing. And the guy has got some moves. I mean, there wasn't a woman in there who probably didn't take at least one layer of clothing off by the end of the movie. It got that hot in it. You know, this is like eye candy to the max. And, you know, I mean, for the men out there, they've thrown in like three pairs of boobs. And every time those boobs came up, the 10 guys in the audience of 400 whooped.
So does it earn its R rating? I mean,
totally, okay. Totally earns its R. Yeah, yeah, it does.
Do we, is in the way that Shame did? I mean,
no, it's not even as good as Shame in the sense that Michael Fassbender. There's some shame in there.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some shame in there. There's some shame, and I did feel dirty at times.
I like what Channing Tatum is doing. He's kind of laughing at himself. He's very cool. He seems to be very much enjoying his celebrity. He seems to be at peace with it and kind of laughing at himself. I mean, I saw him do Saturday Night Live a couple months ago where he did, you know, in his opening act, he did this whole thing about, you know, he stripped. I mean, you know, but it was all very tongue-in-cheek. And I like the fact that he can laugh about it, that he's kind of not... He's playing his story and he's not letting his story play him.
Right.
So I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. And the other person that really impressed me, and you know I don't generally like Matthew McConaughey. I mean, he caught my attention in Lincoln Lawyer last year. He is absolutely brilliant in this movie as the club owner. He's so good in this movie. I mean, this role was made for him. And again, you know, these guys aren't, you know, other than Channing Tatum, the other guys aren't strippers by profession. But they're really good. I'm not just saying they're good because they've got nice abs. They really bring the moves and the style of what the Chippendales and these male entertainers do. The one disappointment is Alex Pettifer. You know, we saw him in I Am Number 4, and I think he was in that Sleeping Beauty, not the Sleeping Beauty, the Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, no,
rendition,
that's right.
With Mary-Kate Olsen. I can't even remember the name
Ghastly
of it.
Ghastly or something?
What Beastly.
Beastly. And he was awful in that, too. He was awful in I Am Number 4. And again, you know, it's a hat trick. He was awful in this one, too. But again, you know, nice abs. But he really needs to give up acting, I think. So I guess the one thing I have, going back to your point, Yazdi, I don't know how this is going to appeal to men. I mean, other than the fact that it's a Soderbergh movie and people might be intrigued to think, what's Soderbergh going to give us? But there's really not much in it for men, I think, other than these three pairs of naked boobs that you get to see. It's very much of a chick flick. Even if you take away the male stripper aspect of the movie, it's very much of a chick flick and it's not a comedy. There are some funny moments and you laugh because I think at times you're a little bit uncomfortable.
So the movie that springs to mind when I think of this one is The Full Monty, because that's another movie with male stripping in it.
Right.
Is it anything like The Full Monty?
The Full Monty was actually clever and witty and different.
It was a comedy, right?
Yeah, it was a comedy.
And it wasn't about good-looking men
stripping. Correct, correct. So. This is about fit men on the stage, naked. Most of the time.
But this movie is running like at 100%.
Yeah, but are the critics all women, Yazdi?
But I don't think, even if they're women, I think they can look past the eye candy. No?
Yeah.
Right, I mean, but what I'm saying is you could look past it if it was like 50% story, 50% stripping. My recollection, or maybe the bits I chose to remember, are that it's like 80% stripping, 20% story. And the 20% story is not even that great.
Interesting, because this is a movie I want to see simply because it has Soderbergh's name on the label.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think you're going to easily talk me out of going to see it. But from what you're saying, I just don't sound like it's my cup of tea.
I mean, yeah. I was surprised. I honestly thought that, like you said, you know, Soderbergh would bring something a little bit different and then there'd be maybe more depth to the story. And the story's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off strong, but it just gets lazy. I mean, it's...
So I'm not necessarily bothered by the subject matter. I just want to see something that's more than, you know, a soft porn show for women. And that's what you're describing to me here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one that I think many women will exchange their 50 Shades of Grey for.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. I'm surprised because I was looking forward to what he might do with this material. But based on what you're saying now, I don't even want to hazard a trip to the cinema.
Well, so. I think if you're a single man, it's a great way to pick up a date.
No,
especially at the end when all the women are hot for something. I mean, I would love, if any of our male viewers have seen it, I would love to have some interaction on this one because, honestly, in my mind, the one thing I noted down here was I really don't know what's in it for the men. Of course it's eye candy. Of course these men are absolutely amazing to look at.
Okay.
Not more than you, Joe.
Well, thank you for that.
Good.
I'm really disappointed to hear you say that. I was hoping for a clever movie with a pushing the envelope type premise. I mean, you know, Soderbergh is a brave, bold director. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to experiment. But I always expect to get that little extra from his movies. But you know what? Sometimes he does disappoint. I mean, you know, the other one that was potentially controversial was The Girlfriend Experience from a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. Where he cast a porn star. And that movie was a letdown in many ways. I mean, I enjoyed watching the experience of it, and that had almost that. I don't think that had any sex in it, if I remember rightly. But it was him being bold as a director and casting somebody perhaps in their real life. So that's another theme that I think is echoed here.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, he did the same with Haywire, the UFC fighter.
Yeah.
So I think he's got that pattern of you know, trying to cast people in realistic roles based on their life experience.
So this is the difference. If you think about a film like Boogie Nights, it was about the porn industry, but it was actually quite a clever movie within itself. If you took the porn aspect out, it was about people who are struggling and the nature of the business and really the good and bad that comes with this fame. You know, it was quite a clever movie without the nudity and the risque material. If you take, and what I'm trying to say to you both is that if you take the stripping out of this movie, if you just think about Magic Mike the movie and Magic Mike the character, there's not much to it.
If we strip out the stripping.
Yeah, because, you know, Soderbergh kind of got on the map with any movie at all. Was, you know, his very first movie was Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And that was a movie which was about sex and videotape. But underneath all the controversial stuff, there was actually a pretty good examination of, you know, husbands and wives and all this stuff. So I was hoping that once you strip away the stripping, there'd be something pretty good at, you know, remaining. But that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, not much more to say on this one.
All right, but plenty more to see, right?
Oh, loads to see, yeah. Yeah. And again, I'll just summarize. I just said it, you know, Magic Mike will totally do it for you if you have even an ounce of estrogen in you, but know what you're going to get, and it's not a bad package. I mean, thanks, Mr. Soderbergh, for thinking about us women. Seriously.
Bad package? Really? Gosh, me. Okay.
Pun what's not intended. Score?
You know what? I think I'm going to give it... I would give Channing Tatum probably an 8 out of 10, but I think the movie probably deserves like a 6 out of 10.
Ooh.
Yeah, all right. but the strip scenes are very, very good and they're very authentic from the one experience that I've had.
So you're really going against the grain because this movie, like Yazdi said, has got a really high Tomatometer rating right now. That's a surprise. 80%, I think, is the current rating.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to movie number 3 then, Woody Allen's latest pick, To Roam With Love. So To Roam With Love, as I already mentioned, is Woody Allen's latest, almost annual movie. Follow-up to the very much loved, Rashmi, I know you absolutely adored to Midnight in Paris last year. This movie stars, it actually has Woody Allen in it, has Alec Baldwin, Penelope Cruz, Jesse Eisenberg, Greta Gerwig, who we just spoke about, Ellen Page. It's another ensemble cast put together by Allen here. And it's billed as a kaleidoscopic comedy set in one of the world's most enchanting cities. Rashmi is probably one of your favorite places on the planet. So, Rashmi, what did you think of this movie?
Okay, so the lights go down, the twinkly Italian music starts, and I literally get goosebumps. I mean, you said it, Joe, in the intro, you know, Rome, Italy is one of my favorite places on the earth, and Woody Allen is probably one of my favorite directors other than Quentin Tarantino. But this isn't even close to how good Midnight in Paris is, but it is a nice movie, and it's a throwback to old Woody Allen, including Woody Allen starring in his movie, which he hasn't done in a long while. And I just loved it for that. It's just good old-fashioned Woody Allen.
Now, Midnight in Paris was not a movie that I liked as much as I think the two of you. It felt a little too whimsical for me. It had this dreamy aspect to it that I didn't connect with. Is this more traditional than than that one was, or does it also explore this kind of whimsical?
No, this is totally traditional. This is totally traditional, and it's, you know, it's quirky and cutesy and it's really funny. And actually, you might enjoy this more than you enjoyed Midnight in Paris for that reason. But ultimately, I think what this is it's a series of vignettes. It's actually four different stories that have nothing to do with each other. And they're only interconnected by the fact that they're all set in Rome. And they all have, you know, good Italian music behind them. And that's really what all the critics are saying when you read, like, Rotten Tomatoes and other film critic sites. They're kind of saying, you know, well, what's the common theme? What I took away, though, was that there's this common narrative going through all four stories, which is more about fame and how ludicrous it is. And it almost feels like it's a Woody Allen soapbox talking about what fame does to people, or what it potentially can do to people, and what people think of fame. So it's not only love, Italy, well, especially Rome, but I really feel like it's got this undertone of fame. And I really like that.
Unlike you, John, I thought that Midnight in Paris was something very special and maybe a one-time deal in Woody Allen's career. So it seems like this one doesn't have any of that magic. It's more straightforward narrative in its more traditional format. But does it all stick?
I mean, I walked out of there thinking this is a great movie, but I also walked out of there acknowledging that I'm a great Woody Allen fan. And if he came on stage and just spoke for half an hour, I would be happy with that. But like I said, I saw something a little bit deeper, but really at its core, it's four different stories that really have nothing to do with each other. And each of those stories on their own are quite funny, but they would be kind of short stories on their own. It works because it's Woody Allen. It works because they're kind of interwoven in time, but they all follow a different pacing. They all follow a different time scale. In fact, one of the stories is one afternoon. One of the stories covers a number of months. One covers a number of years. So it's interesting in that sense to me.
Is it in love with its locale as much as Midnight in Paris was? Because one of my favorite things about Midnight in Paris is the seemingly never-ending series of stills, virtually, of Paris for the first 5-10 minutes of the movie. And to me, that was just a very brave directorial choice, because it was potentially annoying and boring, but for some reason it was just beautiful to see. Did he do that here?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, this is a person who's as in love with Rome and everything, you know, Dolce Vita as I am. And it totally pays homage to Italian life and Italian culture. And in fact, two of the stories are done solely in Italian with subtitles. So like, kind of like Inglourious Basterds, where a large part of the movie is done in a European language, this is exactly the same. Half the film, if not more, is done in Italian. So it's very nice to watch.
I was going to ask you what the acting's like. I mean, there's some very big name actors. And of course, like Penelope Cruz won her only Oscar the last time she worked with Woody Allen. So
yeah,
like Jesse Eisenberg, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, great acting. I mean, but you know, how can you fail to bring your game when you're being directed by Woody Allen? I mean, I think everyone is good. Jesse Eisenberg is Jesse Eisenberg, like we always say. Greta Gerwig's in this, but she's Greta Gerwig in this.
Ellen Page.
Two of the performances that really stood out to me were Ellen Page and a guy called Roberto Benigni. He's brilliant in this movie. I mean, if I had to single out one person, he's the guy I would put my money on. Ellen Page is very good in this, and she's on Ellen Page. She's not the Ellen Page from Juno in this, and she's certainly not the Ellen Page from Inception. So it was good to see her in this role, and she stretches her wings a little bit more than we've seen her before.
Yeah, Benigni is a very loved director from Italy. I mean, he won the Best Actor Award, Oscar, for Life is Beautiful.
Oh, right. No, I didn't realize that. But he's brilliant in this movie. And the story for him is a very entertaining one. And the more and more I think about this, I think this really is a story about what fame does to people, how fame impacts people's lives in ways that you don't even imagine. So it's clever.
Cool.
All right. So let's score this one.
Okay, so I would say mi amore to Rome with love, but not everyone will. This is a sweet romp through the Eternal City with some familiar faces and a familiar style. If you don't want to watch a superhero film and you fancy a bit of a vacation in Italy, run and see this film. I mean, you know, this is going to start at 10 for me, and then I had to kind of knock off points along the way. So I kind of stopped at 8. 8 out of 10.
And not entirely objective 8 out of 10.
Correct.
Is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, here. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, for me, I mean, like you said at the beginning, you know, this had to go horribly wrong for me not to love it.
Okay, so Rashmi is to Woody Allen as Joe is to Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Yes. As Yazdi is to Miyazaki.
That's right.
To which most of our listeners will be like, who?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, let's wrap up for today. mail@moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers, soundcloud.com/moviewallers. We are moviewallers/everywhere, but you can also go to the main site, which is www.moviewallers.com. We are going to be trying to keep that blog up to date with movie news and other little tidbits that we can pick up from around the web. So do check out the site and tweet and Facebook it to your friends as well. With all of that said, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.